reason I wanted to come to Ukraine so soon after being made Foreign Secretary of Britain was because I want to show my country's passionate support for Ukraine.
Decisive measures were taken by Ukraine, and decisive measures have just been taken by the IMF. So there has been a very strong endorsement for the programme, which will release over the course of the next 2 years $17.1 billion.
Дорогі друзі, я вітаю щойно ухвалене позитивне рішення Ради директорів Міжнародного валютного фонду про продовження програми співробітництва з Україною та виділення додаткових обсягів фінансової допомоги.
Ukrainian Paralympians continue to inspire the entire world. After 4 days of competitions, our athletes have 49 medals, 18 of them gold.
Hello, this is Ukraine Calling for September 16th, 2016, a weekly roundup of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main story. I'm Marko Supran for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here are some of the main stories from Ukraine. Foreign Secretary of the United Kingdom, Boris Johnson, visited Hromadske Radio today and issued a statement in support of Ukraine. The International Monetary Fund released the third tranche of its loan to Ukraine this year, despite Russia's objections. This is the first time in its modern history that Ukraine has received a third tranche. The IMF decision opens the door to further financial assistance from the United States and the European Union and will hopefully stimulate foreign investments. Later in the show, we'll provide an in-depth commentary on why IMF support is important for Ukraine by Olena Bilan, chief economist of Dragon Capital. Ukraine's athletes are doing really well in the Paralympics in Rio, better than they've ever have since Ukraine began competing. And this despite the fact that they lost their main training facility in Yevpatoria when Russia illegally annexed Crimea in 2014. They're expected to place third overall. Andrei Demchuk, who won gold in saber fencing, dedicated his medal to Ukrainian soldiers fighting in the east of the country, saying that two of his friends have been killed fighting for Ukraine. Ukraine's performance in Rio caught the attention of the BBC, who ran a big story titled, "Ukraine's Paralympic Success, What's the Secret?" According to Ukrainian spokesmen, there has been a slight decrease in the number of attacks against Ukraine, but their intensity is increasing. Over the past week, 7 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and 18 wounded. The deadliest day was Tuesday, when 3 were killed and 15 wounded. There was an interesting report by Member of Parliament Dmytro Tymchuk, who heads up the Information Resistance Group. He posted on his Facebook page that Russian military personnel are terminating their contracts to avoid fighting in the Donbas. An investigation into the Interior Ministry. Ukraine's Interior Minister Arsen Avakov has come under scrutiny. Channel 24 TV reported that the new Prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko will be opening a criminal case against the minister based on allegations made by the Anti-Corruption Action Center, a civil society organization. The charges are linked to a misappropriation of land outside the city of Kharkiv, the minister's hometown. Visa-free travel to Europe is on the horizon. There was some good news for Ukrainians who enjoy traveling to the European Union countries. A number of media outlets reported that the European Union is in the final stages of approving a visa-free travel for Ukrainians. This decision was expected by the end of the year. But this week, both the parliamentary speaker Andriy Poroby and President Poroshenko made statements that they expect the positive decision by the end of next month. With me today in studio is Ms. Olena Bilan, the chief economist of Dragon Capital. Dragon Capital is one of Ukraine's leading groups of companies working in the field of investment and financial services, offering a comprehensive range of services in equities and fixed income sales, trading and research, investment banking, private equity, asset management, institutional, corporate, and private clients. Olena has been working with Dragon Capital for almost 10 years now. She's joined Dragon Capital in 2006 as an economist and a fixed income analyst. She won the position or was promoted to the position of chief economist in 2009, taking charge of macroeconomic forecasting and analysis of economic developments, credit and currency markets in Ukraine. She was named top 3 analyst in the Ukrainian financial market in the Thomson Reuters Extel survey of global institutional investors in 2013 and 2014. She graduated with a master's in international economics from the EERC program at the University of Kyiv-Mohyla Academy. Olena, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
One of the issues this week is the IMF tranche that we're expecting or not expecting. And I was wondering if you could tell our listeners why Ukraine needs IMF support.
We are expecting the tranche very much because actually the previous tranche was disbursed it's more than a year ago, in August last year, and there was a huge delay. Usually IMF tranches come according to a schedule, it's quarterly schedule, so basically each next tranche should come in 3 months after the previous one, but that one was delayed substantially for various reasons. Well, we had a political crisis in Ukraine, we had some discussion on the budget, and then, you know, that time passes, the economic situation changes, a new round of negotiations started. So basically, this tranche is quite needed for the country. It's not about the money, actually. Ukraine's economic situation is much better than it was before. The economy has stabilized, the financial markets are stable, and there are some initial signs of economic recovery. But the overall situation remains fragile, especially that we still have a conflict with Russia-backed separatists in the east, and it's not settled. There is no political solution found to this conflict. So it's kind of calm now. It's absolutely safe in Kyiv and on the more than 90% of Ukraine's territory, but there is always a risk of some escalation that would definitely hit confidence and economic situation.
You mentioned the war in the east. I know some friends of mine that worked with Dragon Capital, and your fund was actually helping out with the war effort, as I remember. Some of our friends were...
Yeah, that's true. I think, many people are volunteering in different ways now in Ukraine, and definitely my colleagues and myself. So we gave money and provided some medicine and, whatever we was in our... whatever we had the possibility to do, we did.
Can you tell us why it's important for the IMF loans to continue?
The IMF program, so if Ukraine remains in the IMF program, that's how we call it, it's a strong signal to international investor community that Ukraine's authority are doing a right job to put the economy on a sustainable growth path, to overcome the crisis, and to actually to restructure, to do reforms. Reforms are very important for the country to be able to escape the legacy of the Soviet Union and the previous oligarchic structure of the economy. So we definitely are happy to get the funding, but what is really important is to remain in the program and to continue with reforms according to commitments made by the government.
You said that this memorandum between Ukraine and the IMF has substantively changed.
Overall, main directions of reforms will remain same. This is the energy sector, this is fiscal sector, the banking sector, state-owned enterprises, and a big anti-corruption component.
Indeed. In the last memorandum, I remember reading that it had a notion of the increase in the tariffs regarding gas and central heating retailer prices were increased by 285% and 67% respectively. That brings me to this interesting issue that raising tariffs and the pension age is part of the memorandum. Is that correct?
The tariffs is clearly part of the memorandum. We don't know about the pension age, but some elements of the pension reform will also be included in the memorandum. Whether it's increasing the pension age or some other measures is still unclear at the moment. But regarding the gas tariffs, I would like to stress that actually Ukraine really increased tariffs dramatically. It's not just, even this 285% increase is only a first step. If you look at the tariffs 2 years ago, they were at $17 per 1,000 cubic meter of gas. Now it's 11 times higher. You can imagine that in almost 3 years, the increase was 11 times.
Doesn't that put a lot of stress on the country as well as the people that live in the country?
It's true. Definitely there is a short-term negative impact on population and household, but this is mitigated by quite generous subsidies to the poor. And it's very important because the low price means that everybody was subsidized. Even the very rich people, we have many rich people in Ukraine, they don't always show their income, real income. But in reality, some people were really hitting their pools, outdoor pools with gas, and paid this very low price. And definitely it's not the role of the state and not the function of the state to subsidize those rich people with a very low price. So now this is more targeted subsidization that is really directed to those who are in need.
Uh-huh. So the subsidies won't be blanket subsidies for everyone in Ukraine, but
not anymore. Not anymore. They will be targeted and definitely based. They will be based on the income and actually the share of utility bill in the income, which is very high. So part of this utility bill will be compensated and is currently compensated by the state.
See, that's interesting because I spoke with some insiders in the Rada last week, and they mentioned that Ukraine, the government budget requires 120 billion hryvnia to cover the subsidies, which is about 20 billion hryvnia more than what the budget is for the Ministry of Defense. And there's a fear that there would be a tarifny Maidan in the fall. Do you see that in your prognosis?
It would be interesting to see the estimates and the calculations behind the number, actually, because, you know, you can say any number in just to generate the headlines. And basically, so far, what has been budgeted for this year, it was 40 billion hryvnias, seemed to be quite enough to cover this year subsidies. Maybe there will be some small increase, but we will see who will apply, actually. So, but I don't think it's really 100 billion.
So this number is often used as a political football, if you will, to stoke fears that there's a crisis coming in, and maybe, in fact, artificial?
I don't know. I would like to see the estimates, really. That's what usually our community is missing. So that someone floats a number and then it appears that it's not supported by proper calculations.
So do you expect any political risks to these reforms that are coming?
But actually the increase in tariffs has been already done. So that was a very unpopular but very important step to improve the public finances. Ukraine really did a very good job in consolidating the budget, so that reducing the budget deficit. You cannot imagine that in 2014, the budget deficit was 10% of GDP, and last year it was already 2% of GDP. And this partially thanks to the gas tariffs increase. So basically, it was very important for the future, for the economic stability and for the future of public debt dynamics, for the overall, you know, stability of the economy and its growth.
So that's part of the energy independence program.
It is. And actually, that will definitely help to reduce gas consumption because people will think very carefully whether they really want to use gas and to keep the temperature very high in their houses.
Interesting, yes, because often I always see walking through Kyiv in the wintertime, people always have their windows open.
Yeah, Kyiv and large cities is really a problem because in large cities we have central heating, which is very difficult to adjust in your individual apartment. But many people use gas, have individual heating systems. Those who live in the suburb and some small towns, who live like in individual houses, they have individual system, heating system. They can really kind of use as much gas as they need.
So the memorandum with the IMF is sort of it's on the road to modernization and that will bring Ukraine closer into the 21st century.
Basically, the memorandum, the important part is macroeconomic stabilization and supporting this stability. And another part, because this particular program with the IMF is like a deep and long. So it's usually IMF provides so-called standby programs, but this is called an extended fund facility or EFF, and it's much longer term and it's with a much bigger structural component. So basically, the anti-corruption initiatives are in the program, and that's what would really make Ukraine's economy stronger and would help it to recover quicker.
Part of me wonders how. Now, this is clearly a loan, and this means that it has to be paid back. What are some of the conditions of the terms of the loan?
Again, as I said, this is an not very typical IMF program. This is a long-term program. And the first repayment, if I'm not mistaken, will be like 5 years after the first disbursement comes. So basically, it's quite extended over time. It's very cheap. The interest rate is below 3%. And for Ukraine, who has its sovereign euro bond traded close to 8% at the moment, that's really a unique source of very cheap and quite long-term financing.
That's interesting. I didn't know that the sovereign bond was rated at 8%.
Yeah, and it's actually the yield compressed quite substantially over the past several months. Yeah, but Ukraine still has quite a high yield. And this is a reflection of the the absence of the IMF program for a long time, I mean, absence of IMF tranches for a long time, and that some still kind of, I would say, uncertainty about the economy and the conflict in the East.
How closely linked is the exchange rate to the IMF program? I remember last, again, in the the former one, that the exchange rate was something along the lines of 22 to 1. Today it's 26 to 1 and going up. How closely are the two related? Would the, let me just say it this way, would receiving the loan or the program stabilize the currency?
And the currency actually has stabilized already. So it really moved down, and it was 25 several weeks ago, and now it's close to 27. Yeah. But this was kind of quite expected move. We usually have some devaluation pressure on the currency in the end of the summer, beginning of the fall. So what IMF recommends and really advocates for Ukraine is to have a flexible exchange rate regime. Don't fix the currency, because Ukraine had the kind of a pegged exchange rate regime for many years, and for the structure of the economy. It worked not very well. We always had like a period of stability and then economic crisis, because this pegged exchange rate really created an illusion of stability, and it's really distorted how people behave. So many people underestimate the risk of exchange rate fluctuations. They prefer to have all the operations in foreign currency and don't tend to take into account the exchange rate risk. So basically now what the central bank is doing is moving away from pegged exchange rate system to inflation targeting, which is a very popular and popular monetary policy regime, which was adopted by many countries. And that means that the exchange rate will not remain stable, it will be moving, but the central bank will step in to smooth extreme movements in the currency.
With the exchange rate falling to 26, 27 now, how do you think Ukrainians will be able to pay back some of the subsidies and down the road in 5 years? Do your projections on the currency, does it stay at this level? Does it fall? Does it increase? What are the projections down the road?
I think that the current level is close to a fundamentally justified level. So the Ukraine now runs a very small trade deficit. So basically it's close to zero. So, yeah, I think there's no major under or overvaluation of the currency.
So, essentially, economically, things are looking good.
Yeah, they're looking good, but again, it depends whether we have some external shock or not.
Such as the war with Russia.
Such as the escalation of the conflict. I don't think that we are on the brink of a war, so it's, I don't see a reason for Russia to do this. It's quite expensive, both in terms of money and in terms of the potential geopolitical costs and the cost to domestic politics. But escalation of the conflict is still not off the agenda, and so this may be an external shock. And also, Ukraine is a commodity-based economy. In our export structure, about 60% of the all goods that Ukraine exports are commodities like steel or grain. Adverse moving prices may trigger a turbulence on the FX market, for instance.
I read about 2 weeks ago that Minister Danilyuk had said that even without the tranche, that Ukraine had the resources and the tools necessary to stabilize the economy, that they would do something to the effect of sequestering part of the budget. Do you think that's possible? Or do you think that that's just...
I think that, as I said, Ukraine doesn't really need money as much as it needs a signal. So we're okay without money for some period of time, definitely not forever, but it would be possible for Ukraine to survive without IMF funding for another several months and maybe even for another year. But it's much better for the country to get this financing, to get the IMF on board, and to send a signal to the rest of the world that we are moving forward in terms of reforms.
Thank you very much, Olena, for joining us.
Thank you.
Culture and music. This is a week of openings in Ukraine. The 23rd annual Lviv Book Forum opened on Thursday, the 15th. So does an exhibit called Babyn Yar in Kyiv's History Museum. This begins a series of events commemorating the 75th anniversary of the tragic events which will be held in Kyiv for the rest of the month. On Friday the 16th, Gogolfest opens in Kyiv. It's a festival of music, theater, art, cabaret, food, lectures, film, and more. This year it's at the trendy Art Factory platform. We'll post links to all these openings on Ukraine Calling's website. And here's a song for you, titled De Tebu, which means Where Were You? By a new Kyiv band called Frau Marla. It's sort of like a contemporary Ukrainian version of the 1960s classic I Will Survive.
Треба, а тепер мені не треба.
As we look forward to next week, on Monday, Russians go to the polls to elect a new Duma, the Russian Federation Parliament. Elections are also due to be held in Crimea, which has been under Russian occupation since it annexed the peninsula in the spring of 2014. According to her campaign, Hillary Clinton is planning to meet with Ukraine's President Poroshenko next week during the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Ukraine Calling will be watching these and other stories. Tune in next weekend for a new episode of Ukraine Calling. If you have any suggestions or comments, please write to the show at ukrainecalling@hromadskyradio.org. I'm Marco Suprin in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.